From the Media Factory in the south end of Burlington, Vermont, this is 99.3 FM, WBTV LP, Burlington, streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. This is Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers. I'm Shayla Connor Shapiro. Today on Write the Book, you'll hear an interview with middle grade writer and cartoonist Rob Harrell, whose new book is Wink. Rob Harrell created the Life of Zarf series, the graphic novel Monster on the Hill, and also writes and draws the long-running daily comic strip Adam at Home, which appears in more than 140 papers worldwide. He created and drew the internationally syndicated comic strip Big Top until 2007. He lives with his wife in Indiana. His new novel is Wink, published by Dial Press. Ross Molloy just wants to be a normal seventh grader. He doesn't want to lose his hair or wear a weird hat or deal with the disappearing friends who don't know what to say to the cancer kid. But with his recent diagnosis of a rare eye cancer, blending in is off the table. Based on Rob Harrell's real-life experience and packed with comic panels and spot art, this incredibly personal and poignant novel is an unforgettable, heartbreaking, hilarious, and uplifting story of survival and finding the music, magic, and laughter in life's weirdness. Wink opens with the protagonist, Ross, lying on a steel table. Chapter 2 has him recounting some of the scientific terms he now knows, thanks to having cancer. When I spoke with Rob Harrell, I began by asking him about the opening of the book and these two moments. I hope you enjoy our conversation.
I wanted to get right into the meat of it, right. I think, is how I would put it. And it felt like the meat of it was that kind of scary, claustrophobic feeling. So if I was going to jump in anywhere, that's where I wanted to do it. And so it wasn't as much about the medical stuff in my mind as it was about, sometimes you see that in books where they jump into the scariest part or, you know, there's some big action scene happening. And I guess that's kind of as close to an action part that I had, but I really wanted to grab you.
Right.
Because it's a scary thing to go through. And so I wanted to capture that right away.
And you did capture it. And I think that another scene that you could have started in that wouldn't have been anywhere near as effective is like sitting in the doctor's office, getting the diagnosis or, you know, any number of ways to let us know what's happening without it being quite so visceral, you know? So,
yeah, I think those scenes, in my mind play out as a little more surreal almost.
Uh-huh.
I remember when I got my diagnosis, I really did feel like the floor had dropped away or I was floating or, you know, there were some really weird feelings and sensations. So, I guess I wanted to save that a little bit until you knew the character's voice a little bit more and then understood why he's saying that his head is detaching from his body and things like that.
Well, you bring up your having had this same illness. So can you talk about how old were you when this happened to you, Rob?
I was 36.
Okay.
I was an adult. We were living in my wife and I, we had just been married for a year. We moved to Austin, Texas, and all this craziness started down there. It was awful. But then some things happened that were almost too crazy for the book, like how I found the doctor and that sort of thing. So it changed. And I actually think it was a healthy way to think of it as writing about a different character when I wrote the book. So that's part of why I wrote it for middle school. And then there were a couple other reasons. I knew someone else who was going through cancer and that sort of thing.
Okay. All right. Let's see. Very early on, your main character, Ross's friend Abby, wants to come to one of his treatments, and he does not want her to come because he says it would be all hugs and high fives, and that would make it a big deal, which is all in capitals. And I thought that was a great way of just showing us, even with his very closest friend, he does not want this to be a big deal. He goes on to say he kind of hopes it will just fade away. So there's a lot of that sense of not letting it become his story through the book and struggling with how much it, in fact, has to become his story. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, some of that was also, I think, when I had my diagnosis and all that, I remember my parents wanted to drop everything and come to Austin. All of that made it feel more real. Mm-hmm. And so there was part of me was like, no, let's just, until we know exactly what's happening or when I have the surgery or things like that, can we just keep it at arm's length for now or something, it's interesting because it's really nice when people send you a plant. I remember someone sent us a plant but it also in some way makes it more real. Like, oh yes, that's right. We're going through something. And so, yeah. I think that was kind of why I wanted my life to remain as normal as it could.
Right.
And I continued doing my comic strip and all that. And I wanted that normalcy to continue just so you can kind of, put it out of your mind at times, the best parts of the day when you're going through something like that are those rare moments when you forget for a little bit, and then it comes crashing back to you. Whereas, if my parents had come and lived with us for weeks, it would have been very real and very all the time.
Yeah. Now you mentioned your comics and, I want to talk about the drawings in the book. You have comic panels that are fantastic. Ross has a hero that he draws called Bat Pig, right? Bat Pig? Yeah, I loved it. And one of the panels, it's like, why a pig? It's very funny. And there's also in-page art, which is so much fun. My favorite one is pretty far into the book. He decides he's having a pity party for himself. And right after you write that, there's like one of those party favor blow toys with the word wah after it. It's like, those were great.
Well, that's a fun way to keep it light as I go through there too. And Ross is an artist, so sure, there you go.
Yeah, but I like too the kind of hybrid approach to presenting story that's become much more kind of acceptable. And certainly for kids, it's so much fun. So did you plan the drawings after you had a draft of the book, or did they come to you as you went?
I dropped... I had done my Life of Zarf books, which are very much hybrid novels. They have lots of illustrations. So this one, the question was, how many illustrations are going to be in this book? And so this is how I've done it with all those books. As I write, I will just leave a space and put a little note to myself. And I usually have the joke in mind and then just say, party noisemaker, wah, I'll make a little note as I'm going. And then at some point I'll go back and fill in. And that's also nice. There are some days when the writing just isn't there. So it's like, oh, I could spend my whole day filling in some of these illustrations, doing some of these. But I will say I had drafts of this book where there were three times as many illustrations and cartoons. And then that was one of the hardest things, was deciding what to keep and what to pitch. At one point there were lots of drawings of all the characters, and I decided against that because it just felt sort of above Ross's skill level or something like that. I wanted very much to keep it in line with like how I was an artist in seventh grade. I wanted the humor to feel earned, and in character. And there were some cartoons that I did that just felt forced or like I was trying too hard to cram in jokes. So that's what I ultimately came back to.
Yeah. In addition to whether or not the drawings were too sophisticated for his level as an artist, there's also like, would he do that particular, drawing? Right. Like, is that a drawing that a 40-year-old thinks of, or is it a drawing, that a 13-year-old would think of in the first
place? Right. And that was, as far as trying to write a book about cancer that's funny, that was one of the tricks, was that I just had to keep going back to, would Ross say this? Would Ross think this?
Right.
Would a seventh grader think this? And that was sort of my way. The last thing I wanted was anybody to think I was being flippant about cancer or being light about it. I get a little bit of a pass because I've gone through it, but I the last thing I would want is somebody who's going through something really hard to read it and feel like I was belittling or just making light of something really difficult. And so it needed to all come from his voice.
And one of the questions I was going to ask you is, when you're writing tough issues for kids, what are some of the things that you think are important? I assume humor is one of the things that you would find to be key.
Yeah. I think humor, and then sort of, you know, I felt a little bit bad about taking my grown-up situation, the thing I went through, and putting on the shoulders of a seventh grader. It felt mean in a way to do this to this fictional character. So I wanted to make sure I gave him coping skills and some and a support system. Mm-hmm. So him and his friend Abby, you know, his parent or his dad and his stepmom. He's got, you know, the radiation tech Frank, and anyway, there's kind of a support group that develops all around him. But I also wanted to give him some coping skills, and that's where the drawing came in. And then eventually he gets into music yeah. and starts learning to play guitar. So I felt better about doing it to him if I could give him some coping skills.
Absolutely. And you mentioned his stepmother. I want to thank you for writing a real sympathetic, if imperfect, stepmother. I think we can so easily slip into cliche when we start to write these things. And she's not perfect, but I loved how real she was and how caring she ultimately seems to be.
Thank you. And I tried to keep his relationship to her real, that he was having some trouble with her, but I didn't want him to be a jerk to her all the time. He is a jerk to her, at least at one point. But I wanted him to realize.
But he's also a jerk to his best friend. I mean, it's not just sure. about, you know, who she is. I thought it was very real, too, because, his, you know, in the book, his mother has passed away, but it's long enough ago that he has, you know, fairly vague memories. And, you know, she's very special in his memory, but it's not like he sees his stepmother as this evil replacement.
Right.
Was good. Yeah. The material is so perfect for, again, I don't want to trivialize what he's going through or what people go through, but just as far as the horror of standing out and being different in middle school, I thought you captured that so well. You know, and for most of us, it was about, you know, not wearing the wrong shoes that people would laugh at. And in this situation, this poor kid, he's losing his hair, for heaven's sake. You know, I mean, it's just so hard. Yeah. I don't know that I have a question. I thought it was really good.
Yeah, and I had to wear this big wide-rimmed hat for a year.
Yeah, why the hat? What was that to protect?
It was to keep the sun off of my, keep light off of my eye while I was going through the radiation, because you're so sensitive at that point from the radiation burns and that sort of thing. So, yeah, I was told to wear a wide-brimmed hat, indoors, outdoors.
And it couldn't just be an eye patch?
No, they wanted to protect all, because actually the radiation got me sort of about halfway up on my head as well. So that whole area needed to be sort of covered and protected. And so I did. I found this straw cowboy hat that I could kind of stand. But, you know, I was 36 and living in Austin, Texas. So, but the idea of having to wear a hat in class and all that in seventh grade, and then, you know, losing hair, and he has this eye goop or this goop he has to wear all over his face. And it just all seemed traumatizing.
Yeah. Absolutely. On the other hand, nor is he like a constant victim. This is a really nice kid, and I really liked his character. He's great. One thing the book really brought to the forefront for me is the powerlessness of being young. And I mean, even at whatever he is, you know, 12 or 13, you know, and you're not five anymore, but you're still, you know, like you are being thrust into the medical decisions being made by others, you know, the treatments that other people decide what you should have. You know, kids have to move, they have to change schools, you know, and you're at the mercy of
adults,
hopefully responsible adults. Yeah. And that was really interesting as the book went on. I'm like, oh, kids, poor kids, you know.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I think even without going through something like this, school is hard. Yeah, you know, school is stressful. And I think parents sometimes get hung up in all the stresses they have at work and stuff like that. And you kind of forget how hard that can be. I remember middle school being, you know, I think my eighth grade year was really fun. But other than that, I think I was terrified.
Yeah.
A lot of it.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and we talked before about standing out and being different and how horrible that might be in middle school. But then on top of that, with the cancer, Ross has to go through this. And, you know, you also made use of the very real issue of of bullying and social media. So there are these anonymous, cruel memes that start coming to all the kids' phones that are depicting him in situations because of his illness. And, you know, just the cruelty and cluelessness of kids.
Yeah. Well, and that was when I was trying to figure out how to write this. Unfortunately, my best friend's daughter got diagnosed, and I talked with her some, and we kind of were able to talk pretty candidly about it because we were both sort of in that club.
Right. Sure.
But I got to see how, on top of everything I had dealt with, she had to deal with school and kids, and she had some friends who sort of faded away, sort of vanished on her.
Yeah.
And I don't think it was anything they did out of malice. I think it's just kids at that age may not know how to deal with the situation, so they just don't deal with it.
Right.
They just, you know, ghost them, I think is the term. And so when I saw that, that sort of made a bell, a light go off in my head, you know, that maybe this is how I could write this story and make it the most helpful for people. So so hopefully it's helpful not only to a kid going through something, but also to the people around them.
And is she Amber?
Yeah, Amber, that's my wife.
Oh, your wife is Amber. Okay. I wondered if you would dedicate it to your friends.
Oh, no. I dedicate it to my wife. My wife got me through.
Oh, I bet.
And, you know, I comment at the end of the book to hug your caregiver or hug a caregiver today because I couldn't have gotten through it without her. So.
Right. Did you have a Frank as well?
You know, I had a Frank. I had two. I had a Frank and a a girl named Carly. I think it's Callie in the book, but yeah, I had two radiation techs who we talked about music. That was just kind of the thing we did every day. I'd go in and I'd bring in a mix, and we'd you know, joke around about music and all that. So you know, there was no guitar lessons and things like that, but it was definitely really nice to go in and see their faces every day, and they were so friendly and you know, it is a scary thing. You go in and they lock your head down to a table and put you under a death ray.
And the mesh mask.
Yeah, it's kind of scary. Yeah. So it's really, they became incredibly important to me over those 8 weeks, you know, to have them to joke around with. And they clearly know what they're doing. They know that anybody who comes in there is nervous and having a hard time. So, yeah, so I kind of did have my own Frank. Jeff was his name. And his real name was Jeff. I'm not sure why I changed it, but yeah, a lot of the people in the books are, you know, based on real people, or sometimes they're a combination of a couple doctors and that sort of thing.
Yeah. I thought the music while he's in radiation is very perfect for what he would need to calm down. And the fact that Frank plays music that's just like mind blowing to him because he's not actually that musically sophisticated as far as the history of rock. And that was
right.
That was super fun. But then you have a turn in the plot where he becomes musical sort of not only because of that experience, maybe, but certainly it's influenced by that experience. And that was really fun, too.
Yeah, I'd like to think it was something that was in him that just sort of Frank just barely nudged him. And suddenly he realized he had this musical, you know. I also think that's something that happens in middle grade. That's part of why it's such an exciting time to write for, because you do sort of come out from under your parents. I don't know what you would call it. You know, I remember in grade school, I mostly listened to my parents' music. And
sure.
Then in middle school, I started, you know, I actually made a friend with a guy who my parents weren't crazy about. And there was something really cool about that.
Yeah.
Like, he was like my dangerous friend. And you know, and then you start experiencing like, oh, I'm going to try listening to that. And listening to music that your parents don't listen to is kind of this like mind expanding thing that can happen.
Yeah.
So it was nice to give him some punk music to listen to get through his angry period.
The Ramones, right. Now you mentioned your, you know, would you say dangerous friend or something like that? And I don't want to spoil anything. So I liked the way that you have all these kids presented. And when we first meet them, we're like, oh, the pretty popular girl, is she going to end up being his close friend? And then, oh, the kind of dangerous kid, is he going to let everybody down? Or is, you know, and it's like, I like having the stereotypes offered at the beginning. Because of course, as kids, we are all fitting into a category. We really are. I mean,
Right.
But then some of those kids defy our expectations, and some of those kids kind of fall into their box. So,
right, right.
I liked that.
Well, it's fun. You know, when you're writing for middle school, it's really easy to fall into a formula, I've figured out.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a reason why those are stereotypes or stereotypes in some ways.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was fun to play with those. And then a couple of instances to turn the table. That's the fun of writing right there. Yeah.
I found the whole thing so engaging. It was really fun. I want to know, Rob, outside of your own work, what have you been reading lately that you might recommend to listeners?
I've been reading this series. Greg Iles, I don't know if you're familiar with him. He has this series called The Bone Tree Trilogy.
Okay.
Yeah. This is adult.
No, that's fine.
The first one is called Natchez Burning. And they're about this guy who goes back and his dad has been accused. Anyway, they're fantastic. And he used to write like these kind of quicker thriller. So now he's expanded and they take on this like almost, it goes back and deals with the KKK in the 60s and all this. And they're like more literary than what he's written in the past. And they're just amazing.
Oh, good.
I got completely engrossed in those. But then, you know, I've also been reading some middle grade stuff. I have a good friend who just put out a graphic novel called The Big Break. That's Mark Tutuli. We have books come out on the same day.
Oh.
I always like to tinker around and read some other middle grades or graphic novels, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Now you mentioned your book coming out on the same day. So how has this time affected your book tour?
Well, it canceled it. I had a 2-week book tour planned starting March 31st, so the timing was not great. But, you know, it's been interesting to watch my publisher do an amazing job of promoting the book in spite of that. You know, I had this interview planned before that, so I'm continuing to do radio and podcasts and, if I can get on them. But then I've also sort of stretched myself. I'm not a big social media guy, but I'm learning.
Yeah.
I've put out a couple of videos like how to drop bat pig and some talks and yeah. So I'm expanding that way, I guess, expanding into social media, which is really uncomfortable for me, but I'm getting better. I'm getting more comfortable.
I can totally relate. All right. What are you writing next, Rob?
I'm working on a few ideas. I've started like 4 or 5 books since Wink and gotten to about the 100-page mark on each of them. And then I realized this isn't feeling like the one. Uh-huh. And maybe part of that is because Wink just felt right. More than any book I've done, it felt right and it was personal. And so I may be being too hard on myself, but I want to get it right. So I've got an idea that's sort of, it's becoming like a combination of some of the things I've already started. It may take place in the same school or Wink took place, but be, you know, different characters and that sort of thing. But I don't want to commit to that. But then I also have another series that I'm working on that would be graphic novels for a slightly younger group. So I've got some things in the hopper. I wish I would just settle in on one, but that process is kind of slow for me figuring out. And you know, writing Wink was not a quick thing. It took me a while.
Yeah. Well, and I don't know about you, but I think this period of time, a lot of people are kind of floundering a little bit, even though we're home and we're supposed to be, you know, isolated and quarantined. And maybe you'd think you have all this writing time, but it's like not flowing for a lot of people I know.
It's not flowing for me. And I will say, I think part of it is just what's happening in the world is so crazy right now that it's almost like your battery is draining throughout the day.
Yeah.
You know, like you've got this constant distraction. So yeah, I feel like I've been really tired since this has all happened, which yeah, just wears you down.
It does.
Even if I have the TV off and I'm trying to be, you know, self-care, all that stuff they talk about, listening to music, all that. I still, at the end of the day, it's like, okay, I'm ready for things to go back to normal. And I do my best writing, honestly, I have a couple of coffee shops I go to where I do my writing. And it sounds ridiculous, but man, I miss that. I miss being able to, you know, because for my comic strip, I do all that work at home. And it's really nice to get out and go somewhere to to be a different kind of creative. Yeah. And I haven't found my spot here yet. But if this goes on much longer, I'm going to have to.
Let's see. I have one last question for you, Rob. I always like to finish up by asking my guests what advice they might have for other writers. And I wondered in your case, if you have advice for writing middle grade and YA using material from your own experience.
Yeah. First off, I think the main thing that I try to do is just get in touch with me from middle school. And I still have a bunch of photos. I was like in seventh grade, I bought a camera. That was my big thing. I got a camera and started doing photography for the yearbook and things like that. And so I have shoeboxes full of pictures from middle school. Oh, and look through those pictures and you get some of those feelings flood back. I mean, you know, it was one kid who I thought was kind of a jerk, and you see him in there and it's like, oh, it comes flooding back that feeling. I mean, it's amazing how easily you can be back in those shoes. So that's one way. But I also think, I think it's important to talk to, especially if you're writing something contemporary, talk to kids that age. Cause my friend whose daughter was sick, has a brother who was exactly the age of Ross while I was writing it. And he was sort of my sounding board. I would call him and go, how would this happen? You know, if they were going to see these memes, what platform would they see it on? What, you know, how would it come to them? And plus, you know, just hanging around over there, and I see that he's always on watching YouTube videos and things like that. So, which is completely foreign to me, but I want it to ring true with kids that age. So I had to sort of push myself to put social media in there where it wasn't something that happened in my middle school.
Thank God.
Right. I know. We were lucky with that one. Yeah, and then once you get that voice of a character in your head, for me, that's the thing, is I just keep going back to that character and thinking. It sounds weird to say, but once you've been writing the character for a while, I do feel like you get to a point where you think you know what that character would say and what they wouldn't say. And I don't know if that's 100% accurate to a seventh grader's voice, but it was at least accurate enough to my version of a seventh grader voice.
Okay, great. I want to repeat the name of your book is Wink, a novel by Rob Harrell and published by Dial Books. So, Rob, thank you very much for speaking with me today.
Hey, thank you so much. This has been so much fun, and I really appreciate it.
From the Media Factory in the south end of Burlington, Vermont, this is 99.3 FM WBTV LP Burlington, streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. I'm Shayla Connor Shapiro, host of Write the Book, a show for writers and curious readers. That was a conversation with Rob Harrell, author of Wink, published by Dial. You can learn more about his work at robharrell.com. Rob generously offered to write the book prompt for today's show. He created this one for kids. Come up with an unlikely superhero, and then come up with their origin, story, their powers, and what their costume looks like. Try to make it an unlikely superhero, like a bat pig. Good luck with your work in the coming week, and please tune in each week for more prompts and great conversations about books and writing. As we live through this quarantine in which the entire world is basically on lockdown, I hope that you are able to read and write. And if possible, I hope you are able to support authors by attending their online events, reading their blogs and virtual book tours, and finding your way to their books. And for all of you who are trying to write while in isolation, do be sure to check the archives of Write the Book, because each episode offers a prompt written out on the podcast site under the recorded interview. I'd love your feedback about the show. Let me know if you'd like me to interview certain authors or if you have events to announce. Be sure to tell your friends about Write the Book and about the podcast site, writethebook.podbean.com. We are also on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and lots of other podcast sites. You can visit Write the Book on Twitter and on Facebook for updates. You can also access the podcast at my own website, shelaughswithoutus.com. If you enjoy the show, please do rate it on iTunes, like it on Facebook, and talk about it. That's how people hear it. I'm Shayla Connor Shapiro. You've been listening to Write the Book. This is 99.3 FM, WBTV LP, Burlington, Vermont, streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. Stay well and have a great week.